You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Both of you guys have kids now that are following in your footsteps. Hey, how cool is that to see? And how much, you know, like, I think about my dad and how he was with me versus how I'm gonna be with my kids. Mm-hmm. Like, has it changed from how your pops was with you to now how you're coaching
the twins?
You
know, my dad wasn't really, you know, my dad was a drug dealer and drug user. So, I mean, I didn't really have an example when it came to, like, how to do anything when it comes to kids, love, relationships. So, to me, it was always me kind of figuring out on our own. You know, the fact that we have kids by sisters, I think it's dope because, you know, now, you know, my kid's uncle is Gilbert Arenas and vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things we can teach, you know, each of our kids now because we both had long, successful careers. So it's dope. Like, to me, I from everything I had in my past, I try to be like the absolute best father because I didn't have very much. You know what I mean? So to me, it's just kids are first. Obviously, anyone who knows me knows that, you know, my kids are my life. So I just think it's dope, and I think it's that fine line because I decided to coach. He decided, you know, not to coach, and he trains a little bit now. But I, you know, it's that thin line between being dad and being coach and being friend and being a disciplinary action, you know. So I'm learning, you know, on the fly too. But I just never really wanted to be though one of those dads that tried to live through my kids because I'd already lived my life to how I felt to be the absolute fullest. So I'm there in support. I'm there to teach, and it's fun watching these kids kind of fall in love with the game and really want it for themselves. Because, again, with me and him both, our kids aren't going to live the way we live growing up. They're going to have all the advantages they want, but at the end of the day, like, we can't want it more than them. Like, they have to want it, and I can definitely say on both sides of the fence that our kids want it now, and it's dope because they go to school together, they get to play together all the time, and it's going to be fun because, you know, Elijah's only 1 year older than twins, so they're going to be able to play with each other probably up until college.
What's so funny is, like, you know, just like athletes, right? You learn from each other. So learning how to be a father, I got to watch. You know what I mean? Like, I watch my dad because, you know, I was raised by my dad, but he's single father, right? Mm-hmm. So, but he's acting and doing all this stuff. I'm, you know, trying to, you know, I'm raising, damn near raising myself sometimes. Because, you know, when I get home from school and training and all stuff, he's asleep, you know, when I'm growing up. So we can be in the same house 2 weeks and I ain't seen the man once.
Word, right.
You know what I mean? But he made sure I had, you know, my food, my clothes and all that stuff. So, like, watching what, you know, so when I go to games, I'm just watching other parents. Like, all right, okay, all right. You just try. Oh, yeah, they clapped. All right, you know. All right, this motherfucker did a hole. You missed this free throw. Like, I don't want that, right? So you just, you know, you're just watching your peers, you know, watching LeBron, watch Chris Paul, watch. You're watching, you know, because that's all, like, we're in the same boat. We had the same life. So when it's done, what are you guys doing? All right, okay. So, all right, this is how you move in. And you're trying to learn. You know what I mean? You're trying to learn, you know, watching someone make a mistake and say, all right, that's, okay, let me go. Okay, that's, they like that, let me go here. You know, so you're just trying to really just get a whole grasp of, you know, fatherhood after playing. Because when you're playing, like, I can tell you when I played, I was no father. No. Hoop first, bro. Hoop first. Like, I don't care about your little school, your little preschool, you know, your little drawings you done put on the refrigerator. I don't give a about none of that. I got Kobe. Kobe coming to town. I got Vin. Like, these guys are coming to town. I ain't got time to be sitting here, you know, walking down the street. Nah, I'm in the gym getting my 500 shot. Like, so when I had kids, my life didn't stop. Nah, y'all got to fit into this.
Yeah.
You know, but once I was done, it was like, I don't have this. Now y'all are the basketball now.
Right.
You know what I mean? I got to fit into you guys' world.
And that's the difference, too, I think, you know what I mean, with, to obviously give Gil his credit, Gil was a different beast. His work ethic, his grind, his attention to detail, like, that was him. And like I said earlier in the interview, I don't want this to come off disrespectful or not appreciate, but I didn't love basketball like that. You know what I mean? Like, I appreciated life in the moment, you know what I mean? So I'm there from the beginning, you know, with the twins being born, getting up in the middle of the night with my ex and burping one while she's feeding one, changing the diaper and putting them back down. So I was there the whole process, you know what I mean? So to me, it was always going to be, no matter what the f*** else, NBA, what else I had going on, like, fatherhood was and still is my biggest accomplishment, you know what I mean? So to me, the hardest part for me was when I decided to split from my ex-wife and then not having my boys there all the time, because although I was in season, like, we still would go to the park, we'd still go on walks, we'd still do all this shit. So that stuff was difficult for me, and I had to mentally kind of understand that, because I still had to play. You know what I mean? Like, my job, I never forgot what my job was, but I'm like, damn, like, I haven't seen my kids in a month. Damn, I haven't seen my kids in 6 weeks. Like, what the f***? You know what I mean? And to keep it real, that's really one of the main reasons why I retired. When I had just signed a 3-year contract with the Kings, I retired that same year with Golden State, because I hadn't seen, you know, up to that, there was one point where I went like a 3-month stretch without seeing my kids. I'm like, I'm 37 years old, just came up on a championship, I have other things going, like, it might be time to make that transition, because I want more of that now. Like, I want more with my kids. I want to start coaching my kids and being around my kids more. So it was always a special bond with me and the twins, and now, you know, being fortunate enough to have Ashton now too, so I get a chance to start all over. So I've always been a very hands-on dad, so it's dope. But still, everything that Gil said, watching and learn from other people, because like I said, you know, whatever the example you had, like, the examples weren't the typical father shit you see. So, you know, we're always trying to learn on the fly and learn from each other.
I know, obviously, your dad's a legend, but do you think the way he's a legend, but you know, he used to pull up the game, yeah. It was, you know,
yeah, he did some shit,
when the Barnes family was coming through, it was a level of respect you just had, but you know, like, this is not a man who's to be trifled with, but you know, real shit. But do you see the way kind of your dad was a parent to you? Did you make a conscious effort that, hey, I want to be different with my kids?
I want to be better, but at the same time, like I said, and I don't want to come across as, you know, my dad was there, you know what I mean? And he, as Gil said, he made sure we ate, we had clothes, we got to school, everything. Like, they were functioning within their dysfunction. They were functional. So, you know, my dad and I became close when my mom died in 07 when I was with that We Believe team. And that's for the first time when he kind of, to me, became a father. You know, first time I can remember hugging him, first time saying I love you, first time seeing him cry, and I'm 27, but my dad was there the whole entire time. There just wasn't that kind of connect. So, you know, now, to me, I was always under the impression that it was never too late to be a father. So although I feel like he kind of missed out on fathering me, my brother, and my sister, but then also finding out the root of that now, because we've had conversations, I found out how he was brought. To me, he's an amazing grandfather now. And now we have a better relationship. So there's never really no grudge or I want to be better. Like, to me, it was just from the jump, that was my motivation. But now he's a dope dad to me and a dope grandfather, and that's all that matters.
That's the craziest thing. That's the key. It's never, like, when people say, man, it's too late. It's never too late.
Never too late.
It's never too late. It's
especially when you have a kind of a grasp. Like, you got to understand, like, my parents were, like, we had the party house, you know what I mean? So I'm seeing people do, you know, lines of cocaine like this at 3-4 years old walking around. So I knew at an early age what kind of drugs and, you know, had a handle. And that's what people did in the 80s. People did drugs in the 80s and parties and did whatever the fuck they want. So I got that. I was in the fast lane in the early 80s, you know what I mean? So to me, kind of having a concept of understanding, like, he's on drugs, it's him, but it's not really him. You know, once he's able to kind of clean himself up and be sober and really put that effort in you need, he was great at it. You know what I mean? Sure. So to me, I just kind of had a perspective and understanding, because I was in the fast lane, you know, once I touched the earth.
Yeah, most definitely. And now, you know, you said that you're coaching your kids. Mm-hmm. They're top team in their age group, right?
Yeah, we got a really good team.
They're killing, right?
Yeah, we got a really good team. You know, we just transitioned into 13U now, but our team, majority of our team is still 12, but, you know, we got a good team. It's fun because it's fun being able to teach these kids, and, you know, they're at an age where they still listen. And to see their growth and development about the game is fun. So yeah, we got a good team, and you know, we continue to work. And the thing about the twins was, again, I was never going to push them. So they just had a high basketball IQ, but they never worked at the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, I thank Kobe every day, rest in peace. You know, he was the one I feel like kind of let a fire under him, because Gil can tell you, like, we can tell our kids till they're blue in the face, but we're dad. So. you know, yeah, type shit, you know what I mean? But, wow. You know, for me to be, you know it too, right? Yeah. Your pops was a legend, you know what I mean? So, but that's dad. But when someone else says it, you know, so getting them to be able to interact with Kobe and Kobe being able to work them out and come to their games, and then obviously his, you know, untimely death, like, he is the one that really lit a fire under the Twins and started them understanding, like, because I remember I took them to work out with them for their 10th birthday. And Kobe, what are they into? I was like, these motherfuckers play video games all day. He's like, all right. So when they get there, you know, where are you guys going to school? Simultaneously, we're going to UCLA. And Kobe's like, no, you're not. And these boys are like, we're not? He's like, well, not if you guys don't work at your game. Like your dad says, you guys are good on, you know, you guys play video games. So you guys might be some computer nerds or this and that, but you're not going to play basketball. And they're still kind of confused. Like, we're not? Like, no, you got to work at this shit. And he busted their ass in this workout. And after they were done, they were just like, okay, I like this. And then 3.5 months later, Kobe passes. And it's just like, shit, we're going to do it for Kobe now. So when I tell you, like, that's when they're like, well, dad, well, okay, we want to train your dad and we want to start working out more. And since that point, to like to see how much they've gotten better, sure. Because again, they always had the IQ, but now you add the skill to it. It's just like, oh, this is fun. And it's going to continue to get fun now because again, they love it and they want it, not because I want it.
So you talk about Kobe, obviously you got the whole flinching incident mm-hmm. and all that good stuff, but that literally motivates him to bring you on the squad.
Right.
Let's talk about going from obviously with the Magic to now on the Lakers and developing that bond and relationship to the point now where you can bring your 10-year-olds for their birthday out to Orange County
That's
to get
big.
That workout.
You know, because I mean, my Kobe relationship started at UCLA. You know, he was young when he came to LA and he was always on our campus. I'm like, isn't that Kobe? And he'd be walking around our campus working out and stuff. So getting a chance to see him and watch him work out and playing against him in the summer, I was just a fan and kind of had that admiration, knowing just like, yo, this dude is next. You know, I was in 1998, he's, you know, I'm seeing him work out. I'm just like, yo, this dude is next Jordan type shit. So fast forward, I was a fan, getting a chance to play with him. It was just, again, someone that I knew, okay, I get a chance to play against defense against Kobe. This is great. So there's always real competitive nature with us. And then in the Orlando situation, I mean, anyone that plays Kobe, you know, he's dirty as grabs you, elbows you, says shit, does whatever, but they'll never call a foul on him. Like, known for elbowing you in the sternum, known for just doing all kinds of crazy shit, but it was part of that mental, you know, warfare that he liked to put on you. So I was just to the point now, this motherfucker didn't elbow me in my sternum, elbow me, hit me in my nuts, elbow me in my chin. Like, I'm gonna fight this dude because these punk-ass refs aren't calling nothing. So when the ball fake shit happened, it wasn't like, I'm gonna fake the ball in his face. Literally, my arms just did it by themselves. Like, I wanted to slam that shit in his face. So I faked it. And then, you know, it kind of became what it did. But fast forward, so my situation in Orlando doesn't work out. So I get a call from Pat Riley, like, hey, you know, we got this, we're putting this team together. And I'm like, okay, what kind of team? Because, I mean, I'm in Orlando, Miami's right off the freeway. You know, we're in talks to Chris Bosh and LeBron might be coming. And then I'm like, really? What? Really? It's like, you know, but it's, you know, this is what it could be. And, you know, our crunch timeline, it could be you, LeBron, D Wade, Bosh, and Mike Miller. And, you know, we're going to win some rings. So I'm thinking, I'm just going to go to Miami. And it's Miami, too. I'm going to go to Miami. And then I get this call from a number I don't know. And I'll never answer my phone, but I just happen to answer it. And it's Cole. I'm just like, yeah, right. Who's this? He's like, nah, it's Cole, for real. I'm just like, what? I'm like, what's up? So we kind of start talking. And he told me, he's like, anyone crazy enough to fuck with me is crazy enough to play with me. Do you want to be a Laker? And I mean, I grew up in Cali. I'm a Showtime Magic Johnson dude. I'm like, hell yeah. So like 4 days later, I was a Laker. So we went from kind of just competitors to teammates. And then during that very first season, we were both going through stuff in our personal life. So we really, really bonded. Like, we were kicking it. I got this motherfucker go out in Milwaukee of all cities. Like, we were always out and about doing shit and really kicked it and talked about our kids and talked about life and business and family and all this kind of shit. So we really went from competitors to teammates to brothers, to the point where he's always sending the Twins their new shoe. He's, you know, Gigi would, we'd all be playing at the all the shit out in Orange County, and Cole would hit me up the night before, like, yo, I saw you guys in the tournament. What time you play? We play at 9, they play at 11. I'll be there. You know, Kobe would come 2 hours early to watch the Twins play. So it was just like that kind of relationship that I built with them off basketball is obviously something I'll never forget, and very grateful, because you hear so many different things about Kobe, but if he lets you in, he's nothing like you hear he is. He's just, he's an incredible, crazy, shit-talking motherfucker. You know, he's a cool-ass dude, but he's the Mamba with that mentality to everyone else. But if he lets you in to see the person, the man, the father, he's an incredible dude.
So how much did he help impact, you know, obviously he was coaching Gigi, how much did that help you kind of with coaching your kids? Any advice he kind of gave you on that side?
No, not necessarily, because it was something I always wanted to do. I was actually surprised when I saw him cross over. You know what I mean? Because I used to talk shit about him all the time. Like, not shit, but like, you got all girls, I got boys. Blah, blah. We would go back and forth when we were having kids. You know what I mean? When he was having his daughters. Like, damn, another girl, Cove. And he, I remember he, in bold letters one time, and I think when he had his last daughter, he's like, God has a sick sense of humor. And he had it in capital letters when I think his last daughter was being born. So once he found out that Gigi had a love for it, it was beautiful because he finally could attach himself to that. And that's when they went to another level, you know, because he was waiting for that opportunity. He was very content with being a girl dad, but he, obviously he's Cove. So he wanted to be able to teach basketball to somebody. And, you know, when Gigi was the one, it was dope to see at the beginning where she kind of got into it. And then he even said it on our podcast, like, yo, she wanted, she's the one that got me watching games again. She got me ordering the NBA package. Like, it was Gigi. So to be able to see that and just kind of see his whole transformation, I was the one that was actually surprised because I already knew I was going to do it. I just never thought that I would see Kobe sitting on the bench coaching girls. And when I tell you, like, the one thing he told me is like, yo, these girls practice like 5 or 6 days a week. Running the triangle, Dizzy's like, she's like, you know, we're not the most talented team, so we have to have some kind of structure. So those girls are out there practicing 5, 6 days a week. Just to see his attention to detail and his crossover to being, you know, his daughter's coach, I thought was dope.
We got Master P and Mercy Miller on the show, man. We appreciate y'all pulling up.
Yeah, nah, like you said, what I love about what Mercy did, it's important that we're in a position where you can commit early and have your plans for college. Because, you know, most players, they plan with a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be able to play with no pressure. The coach believe in him. Coach Sampson told him the other day, like, it was only 3 other players he seen that remind him of him that he'd actually seen. Was LeBron, D-Rose and Westbrook that he seen instantly that he felt like was special.
So when you hear that.
Yeah, that is,
I mean,
that's great people to be like compared to and like just seeing that for me, I mean, that just pushed me to drive me to be one of them greats. So it just makes me want to keep going.
Now, P, you started out of Houston early on. That's where you first started before you moved to the Bay. So how much did it mean for you to see your son following your footsteps and going to University of Houston as well?
It was great because at first he wanted to go to Duke, you know, as a kid growing up. All you think is Duke. But I took him to a lot of Houston games. When we left New Orleans, we moved to Houston. And I took him to a lot of games, him and his brother. And he always told him, Dad, when I go to college, I want to go to either University of Houston or Duke. So last year, a couple of years ago, we went, he seen all the people that I done played with and everything from Akeem to everybody. He seen all the legends there and he felt the atmosphere. He go in there and it's like, man, I want to be on that wall. And you know, it was great because, I mean, he worked hard. Like just not cause he my son, but people think, oh, he getting no favors. We've been doing this since he was 4 years old. He always played up. I think maybe he's like 5 or 6 years old. He was playing with Jalen Suggs and Hersey and all those guys on a national AAU team. And then he took his own AAU team. He played with the Knight Riders and, you know, the PM Ballers. And this team that I put together, what you've seen from DeMar to Brandon Jennings to all these, you know, NBA stars come from this program that I have in California. I go in the inner city and get some of the top kids in the country. You don't know they're going to be stars, but I stuck with them. And we didn't have to go through a lot of stuff that a lot of kids sold their souls to. And so we was able to help them cross their careers over and then show my son the same thing. Like, man, you don't need to play for no tennis shoes and no backpack. You know, do what you do if you love it. And then because we've seen a lot of kids, you know, a lot of kids that were stars back then. We don't care about being ranking. Like, people just started finding out about Mercy because they thought he was a senior last year. So he's never been ranked with his class. Like, no, think about it. This crazy. So when ESPN seen him maybe this year in the summer, they got a chance. Like, what, is he a freshman? So all the other kids that been, you know, way above him, they never really seen him. Eighth grade, he played varsity with Jalen Suggs and Chet and them, and they won a title. Then last year, as a ninth grader, he won state championship, and if it wasn't for him, we would have lost. I mean, we played some of the toughest teams that, you know, some, what's the kid from Detroit?
Monty Bates.
Yeah. So we done played some of the toughest schedules out. We don't run from numbers, we just look at numbers. You know, we just like look, same way you look at numbers. We don't care who a person is. Yep. And that's how I played. When I played against Milk Wagner and all them dudes, people was like, Milk Wagner, man, I don't know who this guy is, but I got to play him. and if he could take one of these bowls, he gonna be good, cause he, you know, I played them, Gil, they wanted me to go to Louisville, so I was gonna go to Louisville at one time. I was gonna be with Denny Crum, but I ended up going to Houston and playing with Guy Lewis, one of the legends, coaches around, and then my son now being able to go to Houston and commit. Because think about it, Hersey, his older brother, is one of the highest paid players, and he go to HBCU. Mm-hmm. But it's in the OVC, the same where John Morant came from, mm-hmm. with Murray State and all them. So you got an opportunity to do, we were talking about the other day, you got an opportunity to do something incredible, but he got to score the ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't, like, this game not and change.
Yeah.
And we straight shooters.
Yeah.
I learned how to shoot the dog with no lights, you know.
Yeah.
And so I gave it to my kids, like, look, if you can shoot the basketball, you won't be all right.
Yeah.
And you athletic and you could do all the other things you could do, you know, and you understand about getting good grades. And then, you know, like Hersey was able to get one of the biggest deals in college. Imagine you already got your own school 2 years picked already. Mm-hmm. You know, same guy who owned the Houston Rockets come from University of Houston with me. So.
Yeah, so that's a really good thing, because it does take the pressure off.
Yeah.
You know, really, because now, you know, you don't have to worry about the college and, you know, them in the stands, yeah. seeing, you know, like judging you, you'd be like, oh man, I gotta perform. You just get to go play now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You get to play, you get to study, you get to, you know, like really tackle, you know, like the things in your game that you need to improve without anybody actually judging it. Like, you don't have to worry about like going into the summer, and it's like free agency. You go into the summer, you know, competing with everybody else for college,
mm-hmm.
that's nerve wracking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Parents in the stands just yelling stuff out like, no, let me do me.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like right now that you already signed, that's the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
Getting that out of the way now is just easy, just training, you know, getting your routine down, you know.
You know, you see us winning that with Chris every day.
Yep, I see him, that's what I said.
So, you know, you see what Zaya was able to do right now, go to the G League,
mm-hmm.
but you know, with us, it's like, we got to get that education thing first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been preparing for that because we got some bigger things that it's life after basketball. Basketball only lasts so long.
Yeah.
And so we look at everybody's careers, all the greats, all y'all, everything that you done is like, at the end of the day, we got to have something to fall back on. We're not going to be able to play basketball forever, because for all the time, it's going to catch up with you.
Yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your son KJ in the league now, is watching him during summer league, putting in work with the Rocket Squad. How much did you push him as a father to get into basketball, and when did you know that he could play in the league?
Actually, I never pushed him to play. He just out the womb, man. He just, first time he saw a ball, he picked it up and he never put it down. Like, to be honest, like, it was just, he was always around. He was like, when you're a kid, like I had KJ when I was my rookie year. I'm saying, so my second year, he was around.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been around the game since he could walk, mm-hmm. and talk, and that's all he knew. Like, my dad in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my dad in the NBA. Like, my dad on TV. Like, that's him. Like, my daddy dunking, my daddy good, my daddy doing this, my daddy, so that's all he knew. So he always played, man, always was around the game, always had a ball in his hand, man, from, if there was a ball, if there was a hoop in the swimming pool, he's shooting and dunking. If they're on the court, he going to the rec, playing with the older kids during the summer, we in Dallas, and he just always wanted to be around the game, man, and he just, as he got older, he just continuously got better and better and putting the time in and started listening more what I'm telling him. And then, like between like his junior and senior year at Sierra Canyon, man, I just like, and the way the game was changing, like positionless and things he was doing, like I was just, I mean, if he started just like just shooting the ball more from the perimeter, like, that's all he was, in my opinion, like that's all he was missing. I'm saying, because he could shoot it well, but he wouldn't shoot it. Like, but I'm just thinking like, but why, if I'm being successful doing this at this level, like at a high clip, why would I go out here and shoot 6 threes a game when I can average 19, dunking and shooting twos and free throws, you know what I'm saying? So I got it, but I'm just trying to explain to him, like, in order for you to get where you're trying to get to, this is what you got to do. And he just started listening, man. He just continue to get better, man. Just the growth and his willingness to put the time in, the willingness to be critiqued, and the willingness to take a unbeaten path to get to where you want to get to. And just the disrespect he had, he just used it, man. And with me being there, like I'm his biggest supporter. Like I'm Team KJ, like like no other dad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so we there, man. I'm honest with him during the games. He doing it, and yeah, man. I was just proud of the work, and of course we all want to be first round picks. We all want to be this. We all want, but everybody path different, as you know. You know what I'm saying? So him being able to be drafted at 52 was a blessing. Being able to go to the Rockets in that situation is a blessing. And being going into year two now, expectations are there for him to get minutes, contribute in a major way, and continue to, I'm saying, grow. And what I've seen of him this summer, he's doing that. He's doing other things that he needs to do in order to be successful, to help his game grow. And the sky's the limit for him. Like, he has no idea. I tell him all the time, but you have no idea how good you can be. So it's just for me, man. I just sit back, man. I'm a proud dad. I'm saying, just to watch it, man. The childhood dream of his. Parents who children become successful in their childhood dreams, like, know that feeling. Like, for them to voice some at a young age, like, I want to do that, no matter what it is. And for them to follow through with it, and them to put the time in and the effort and the heartache and the tear, all that into it, and for it to come full circle. Like, I was more happy in that moment, man, for him to be drafted than I was on my draft day. I'm saying, because that's my child, and I know what it meant to him. I'm saying, so.
What kind of dad are you at the games? My pops play in the league, and, you know, I would look at him more than the coaches. That was kind of the thing. Yeah, I know you got kids now. It's like, you know, coach might say something. Coach might say something. I gotta look at him. Yeah, nah, okay, shoot it. Nah, I'm gonna go ahead and pull. So, what kind of dad are you watching those games? Or are you constantly making eye contact with them, giving them advice? Kind of, it's like, I think like Richard Williams with Serena and Venus. Like, they could just look up at Pops, and he's gonna tell them
early
the way to
on,
go.
Yeah, like early on, like freshman year, sophomore year, summer, junior, like junior year, I started backing off a little more because I saw you starting to listen. Senior year, like, I just sit there and legs crossed, popcorn. Yeah. but if I see something, I'll be like, hey, yo, he'll think about it, he'll raise his hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because we didn't talk about these situations, and like during the course of the game, you got to process things and think about plays that you made or you could have made during the course of the game. So you're critiquing yourself as you're playing, and then after the fact, you do it even more. But in that moment, I'm like, yo! Like, I should have spun. So it's just that. But no, at the game, like, I'm rowdy. Like, I'm loud. Like, oh, yeah, I'm that dad. Like, he know, he been there with me. He the same way. You know? Like, he the same way. I'm that dad. Like, I'm supporting. Yeah, like, yeah, my kid, no matter what. So, my daughter's six, soccer. Dad, you can't yell at my games like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? This is what she tell Dad. Like, you make me nervous. Like, yeah, but I'm out there, hey. Like, I'm Team Martin,
yelling
baby,
at
like,
everything but the plays.
Yeah, everything.
Ref, you in the wrong position to make that call.
Yeah,
get down there. Like,
all of that. All that. I had a ref tell me, like, before I say something one game, he just make a statement before he turn around. Like, learn the game. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
then he turn around, he like, oh, shit. Like,
yeah.
Like, he know what he talking about. Yeah, like, yeah. Like, it's them situations. But, no, I man, ref, they out there, they meet a little huddle, and I'm... Man, the only thing y'all should be talking about right now is how bad y'all been today. Oh, I'm that dad.
Yeah,
oh, they come over there, Mr. Martin, we're going to have to ask you. I ain't calm down. I ain't cussing. I ain't doing nothing. They can't tell them to do their job better, and I won't have anything to say. I'm that. Like, you say something about my kid in the stand? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I got something to say. Like, listen. 9 to 99, blind, crippled, or crazy. You say something to mine, I'm gonna approach you, and I got something to say.
It was just the rules is different. Like high school rules, and like, you know, it's like when we get to a certain level, we forget all the rules we played in. Like some of those things to us, that's not even a call.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
Like that? What is that? That fall on the floor? This ain't 1952, bro. They done changed that. And they're like, well. Not up here.
Yeah.
Yeah. They haven't done that here.
Ref told me, like, I told Mel, man, like, kid camped out in the lane, man. It's 3 seconds is a viable call in basketball. He said, but it's not a popular call. I said, but it's still in the rule book.
Like, it's not a popular call.
It's not a popular call. Like, where?
Yeah.
Here? Oh, that's probably the only place I've ever heard that. So, listen, man, get him out of the paint, man. Just camp out, I'm I support, man, to no end. I'm loud. I'm rambunctious. I'm cheering. I'm cheering my guys on. My daughter, whoever in it, like I'm passionate about it. I'm passionate about my family. I'm passionate about whatever it is they doing. So I'm gonna let people know who I'm there for.
Let's talk about your son, Tanner. Oh, I was watching some highlights.
That's his favorite.
But I'm
just, it's tough. It's
and
tough.
For people that, you know, obviously your NBA career, but at Duke and the stuff that you were getting off, I'm watching clips of your son. I'm like, damn, this looks like Dante back in the day when he was just free to go get buckets, do what he wanted to do. When you look at him, he's going to be a junior in high school now, mm-hmm. right? Now, how do you help him? I saw an interview he did for a paper, and he was talking about just kind of dealing with the pressure of following in your footsteps. How do you help him deal with that? And do you put any pressure on him to follow in your footsteps as well, or to just, you know, let him worry about being his own man and having his own game?
Well, first of all, we have two separate games, period. Mm-hmm. My son is extremely skilled. He can
Facts.
Really shoot the ball.
Facts. Are you saying you couldn't do it? I mean,
well, no. He just has, he's developed differently. Like, he's been playing basketball since he was in Pampers. Like, okay. I remember he was like 18 months old, learning how to walk, and he's shooting on the wall. Of my room door. Like he's been ingrained in basketball. Some of his first words were defense. Like he's been in arenas his whole type of life. I didn't have that life. So he's been dribbling his ball and been like, he's come to YouTube era, been watching plays, learning how to play, been in NBA arenas, like learning from different guys, been around Kai at an early age, been around Bron at an early age, like seeing all this stuff. So his game is more mature than mine. I started really playing basketball in like sixth, seventh grade.
Yeah.
And never really thought about being a professional athlete until I got to college, until like my cousin Al was like, yo, when you getting coming into the draft? And I was like, how you do it? Like, I was always preparing for life after basketball. I was wanting to go get a college scholarship, play basketball in college, but like, I didn't really think, it didn't really cross my mind that I could be a professional athlete. So from the door, that's been his focus. So he's kind of focused his game after like a Kai. He can score, he can get downhill, he can really shoot it. He has my build. He's strong and athletic, but he just plays it. He plays it at a different level than I did because I didn't have the opportunity to be a guard. Like, I was the biggest person on my team. They put you in the post. Like, now they'll let a 7-foot person play guard. Like, back then, you're big, you're a center, you're a power forward. I didn't play guard to AAU in like my junior year, and my AAU coach was like, no, you're a shooting guard. I thought I was a 4. Okay, cool. Now I get to do some different things. But so he's been a point guard his whole life, a big point guard at that. And he had some gifts that I just didn't have. I didn't focus on shooting. I just was just having fun and hooping.
Yeah, I'm his agent. So
he loves the kid.
Yeah, so he's better than Dante.
No, Yes. Yes.
You know, we got all the skills. We got the dribble skills. We got the hesitation. And I'm kind of disappointed in Dante because he put him on another AAU team when that's my guy.
That's always been his guy.
I teach my guy 1-4 flat. Do not care about the rest of the team.
The 1-4.
He was the one I used to say, hey, don't pass. It's okay. Do you. 1-4 flat.
Yeah, he's bad for him in that area. But how I try to help him out, we watch clips. Like, now that I am a coach, I get to see it in a different capacity, break the game down for him, show him how to be a point guard. Just teach him different intricacies because it can get kind of boring because he plays in Missouri. So, like, he can dominate off his body. Mm-hmm. But now you're on the EYBL stage right now, and you're used to just being able to dominate people who now they're maybe bigger or faster than you. Now you have to, like, think it with your mind, and you have different responsibilities. So now I get to be more hands-on because I also already have him during the summer.
So what's it like for you both of y'all just seeing that world now? Hey, you know, coming up, it was, you know, regional, sectional. Like, you were playing with guys in the same area. Now you get an EYBL, dudes is jumping teams, you got trades, free agent. I mean, you got all this crazy stuff going on now with these leagues.
I think, you know, EYBL, all of that is just, it's a money play now, so it's not the same when we came up. You know, like the teams then were just all dominant players.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was, if you was a freshman and you was on that team, you was high level. Like, just to be a freshman on a traveling team back then, you was nice as hell. There was no 15U, 16U, 16U, gold, platinum, and hold back. It was just one team. And if you was nice, you made that team. If you didn't, see your ass next tryout, goddammit.
See, I had a different experience. Being on the East Coast, like, we only came and saw the West Coast. Mm-hmm. For Vegas tournament.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And
the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And maybe Pump and Run and Dominguez or something like that.
So the first time I saw, like, Mike Miller, I was like, oh, man. Like, I never had seen a 6'8 white guy that could, like, dunk and really shoot and, like, really be athletic. I was blown away because we don't just have those on the East Coast. But my team was, we had the same jersey, different shorts. Everybody had their own shorts and their own shoes. But, like, me and my cousin Al, and we had some dudes from around the way. And they were just putting us on the circuit. Like, we didn't, it, they
oh,
could hoop.
Had a bullshit team.
We one of them. Like, oh, it was but they could
the
hoop.
Non-matching shorts.
But, like, it was, but my coach, Sandy Pione, was, like, taking kids from his area and, like, taking care of them. So, like, Randy Foy was one of them. Like, Kai was one of them. He had another big man, I can't remember his name before, but Al was one of his products. Like, they were kids from around the way that he just put and showed them a different side of basketball. I would literally have to drive an hour and a half to go to practice every day. So my parents actually worked, so New Jersey, my parents worked in New Brunswick. They would come back south home from work, and then we would go up to North Jersey to take me to practice twice a week. Okay. So that's like, that's possibly like 3 hours of driving. Just to go and practice a day because we didn't have any AAU teams where I was from.
Oh, so there was basically no.
Yeah, so we were just, I found a team that was kind of had some sponsorship and was going a couple places and jumped on it. I didn't have a collection of, like, killers to go with. You probably had some kids that could really, really, really hoop. I'm 6'6", but I might be the third tallest dude on the team. I had me, Al. I'm trying to see the next person that played with me. Remember James Felton?
No.
6'10 kid that went to St. John's. But
I'm sorry.
Rodney White.
Okay, yeah.
Rodney White. I had Rodney White for a couple of tournaments. But, like, Rodney was floating between D.C. and Philly. Like, his family.
Oh, so he was on D.C. assault.
But, yeah, but his family structure kept changing, so he was in different places at that time. So he had us for a couple of tournaments. Like, but we didn't have the resources. We didn't have... I was blown away when CMH had Jordan uniforms.
Yeah,
for the first time.
Y'all was a poor, like, AAU team. We got it. It was like a park league.
So we didn't have what y'all had.
Shit, I played with the K-Swiss squad. Which
bro, you played with 40 stars too, though.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Did you ever play a Christmas game?
Hell no.
Dude. Mm-mm. So we're going to speak hypothetically, but what's it like, you know, for players like yourself? You played a lot of day after Christmas games, but just that holiday season is, you know, you're grubbing out whatever, the ham, the meat, the greens, potatoes, beans, tomato, all that good stuff.
Uh-huh.
Does it impact your game, or is holiday season, like, does it slow down for you at all, obviously, between that Thanksgiving kind of Christmas window, and you ramp back up, obviously, once the holidays are over?
Okay, so let's go ahead and throw this out in the air. Holidays are the worst for actual, I can't speak for all sports, NBA. Because the problem with, you know, holidays is either you're home and you're leaving the same day, or you're on the road. So you're not really actually enjoying the holiday with your loved ones, because it's like if you play on the 26th, the day after Christmas, you're leaving the 25th around 3 o'clock, right? They might extend it to 5. You know, the fight might be at 5, but you're not really, you know, you're just opening presents. Hey, all right, dinner, whoop, and out. You're on a plane onto the next city because you're playing the 26th. If you're playing at home on the 24th, your next game is the 26th, you might be on the road again. So, or you might have to, you're on a road trip. So I never really got to enjoy Christmas at home because I was never there. Like I remember Jared Jeffries, Thanksgiving and Christmas, his mother had to drive to wherever we were to give us food. So she'd make the food and deliver it to the, so she drove all the way. So if we was like, let's say Chicago and she's in Indiana, she'd drive to Chicago and then we'll get a dining room and she'd set up Thanksgiving for us.
So she's making
Christmas and Christmas food.
How was that food?
Oh, amazing.
Okay.
Yes, it was amazing.
Even with the travel.
But as I said, so you're Christmasing with your teammates for the most part. So you're not really in that Christmas spirit.
What's the worst place you had to spend a Christmas at during your NBA career?
Well, since I'm on the East Coast, it was basically anywhere because it was cold as shit. He was in some cold city that was snowing and, you know what I mean? And in a hotel eating hamburgers and what's the name? They don't, you know what I mean? That's like eating fries, hamburgers, and what's the name? If you didn't have, you know, you wasn't home. So it was like, it wasn't depressing, but it wasn't like, especially when you start having kids, it's not like, dang. Like, yeah, send me pictures of the little dude like the present or whatever.
Something. But I mean, we you joke and you laugh about that, but how hard is that for you as a parent? Because I remember, you know, my pops was on the tail end of his career, so, you know, it wasn't like he wasn't around a lot, but just being able to form that bond with kids, and these are supposed to be holidays, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, things like that, where you get to form those bonds, and it's like you're doing it on FaceTime. Like,
yeah, you're a parent, but you're not a parent. Yeah. Like you're a substitute parent. Usually, like, there's a running joke that wives and girlfriends are like, man, you need to stay on the road because every time you come in here, you mess up the routine. Because, you know, like, the family, your family has a routine and you're on the road 16 days, you come back, you're messing it up because, you know, you're happy to see the kids, you're staying up late, you're doing this, and it throws them off. And then you're back on the road. Now they got to get them back on track. You come back, mess it up again. So you have this little funny friction. But when it comes to holidays, you know, it's just, you're just a paycheck. You're just a wallet, bro. You're just a wallet of this wish list of what needs to be happening. You're just giving it like, yo, back then it was no FaceTime. So you're calling like, oh yeah, I got the picture. Yeah, he didn't look too happy. He ain't like that. He ain't like the train said, all right, okay. Like they play with the box more than the toy. Got it. You know, little kids, they like the boxes in the bags more than they did the toys.
Last question comes from TK. He says, how do you manage having a significant other while playing in the league?
Yeah, don't. No, I'm just playing.
I knew where this was going.
I mean, is he asking for a serious one or?
He may be getting ready to play in the league and he wants to know how to maintain his boo.
It's so hard. Look, I'm just going to be honest. We're just going to be honest here. When you're coming to the NBA, you're a kid, young adult. You're coming in with a girlfriend who's a young adult. These are not women. You're not men. You're not, no matter if you have a family, you're in your 18, 19s, 20s. now you are a star player or NBA player. No matter what she was in college, high school, 8 or 9, real 8, 9s, and 10s are gonna be throwing it at you. I don't care how strong-willed you think you are, but when the top-tier girls that you see in magazines and TV and the videos are throwing it to you, you ain't rejecting it. You know, so it's how strong and realistic the girlfriend is at that moment in time, which is the hard part. It's not necessarily the guy. It's usually how mentally strong the woman is, you know, dealing with possible other women, other women cheering for you when you go into the arena, like, yeah, that's my boo. And then, you know, you got 20,000 other, you know, bodies in there saying the same thing, you know what I mean? So it's really hard. But besides that part, let's just say you're both adults. It's even harder because this part. You're on a road, you know, 2-3 weeks at times, right? When you come home, you want home-cooked food. You want your bed. You want relax. Well, your girlfriend and the kids or your wife and the kids has been home for 3 weeks. When you come home, they want to go out. They want to go out and eat. They want to go to... So, boom, you guys are clashing off of something that's just simple. One's been out eating food and hotel food and sleeping in different beds, not knowing what hotel room number he's in, coming home and just trying to relax, while the other one's like, we've been home this whole time. We want to go out. Here's the kids. And you're like... I'm happy. I really wanted to just sit on by myself a little bit. But you know what I mean? And that's where usually fights happen. And that's why the statistics is so high. The first 4 years, there's a divorce. Because out of the first 4 years, that's the first time you're actually seeing that person for who they are. Like, what's your name again? Oh, this our kid? These our kids? How old is this one? 7? Are you 7 already? Damn! Like, what do you eat? Like, it's like the basic questions like you ask. What's your favorite color again? Blue. Yes, it was blue. I thought it was red this whole time. Okay.
You were on the road thinking it was red?
No, what happened is because you have this, it's a fantasy relationship. It's a fantasy relationship. Like, let's not fool our, it is not a real everyday relationship. You gotta remember, I'm playing 41 games on the road. I am gone as much as I am home. So our fights don't actually get resolved. So if we have a fight, we're gonna resolve it in 10 days over this text. Yeah. We're not sitting down like real adults and hashing this shit out. We're texting. You can see it on the players' faces, a whole bunch of that, and then by the time a week done go by, you're like, oh, I can't wait to see you, miss you, this and this. But you didn't really deal with anything. You go home for 2 days and then you're back on the road. So you're not really, like, really having a real, real family relationship. And then in the summer, it's vacation. Are we gonna go on vacation? 2 weeks into that player is already trying to set up his next workouts. I need to go ahead and get out of this house, bro. Get into these workouts. You know what I mean? So you don't really get to see who that person that you've been with for 10 years until you're done and you have nowhere to escape. And you're like, yeah. Oh, so you like to read all Sunday. Oh, you like to talk for an hour, huh? So we just got to talk about our feelings, got it? Yeah, that's how it is.
That's real.
Like, he be sitting there like, yeah, them groupies on the road was so much better. It was so much funner. They didn't talk at all.
Yo, I know nothing about this, but we appreciate y'all. It's been No Chill with Gilbert Arenas. We'll be back very soon with more. Appreciate y'all questions as well.